Prosopagnosia.
What's that?
It's the inability to recognise familiar faces, including your own.
That must be quite a challenge for people to live with.
It is. It's even more of a challenge for computers.
But for machines, it's getting a whole lot better.
And it's the subject of today's show. Faces. How to find one and what to do with one once you've found it.
I'm Mike Tolte.
And I'm Andrew Spooner. Welcome to Context, a show about the right experience on the right device at the right time.
Roll the credits. Welcome back to Context, a new show on Channel 9, where we talk about natural interaction with devices, often powered by an intelligent model. This show's coming to you from the Microsoft campus in Reading, UK, and today we're going to be talking about the subject of faces.
And that's technology that we know that we've got, but it's really used quite sparingly in the real world at the moment. I think we've seen it for a long time in sci-fi films, and we've become quite used to it there. But it's starting to become maybe a bit more mainstream. Maybe that's because the hardware and the software is actually becoming quite affordable for us.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about scenarios, probably one of the main ones that people see, certainly in the UK, because we have those biometric passports, is you go to the airport and there might be a big queue at the regular terminals, and you can go to the automatic terminals where you put your passport in and then it does some kind of scan of your face. And they don't really tell you how that works, and then hopefully it lets you through the gate and out you go.
Yeah, and but my worry with that sometimes is that because that's quite a tense environment and it's the first time someone's been introduced to those technologies, their experience of using it isn't going to be really positive. It's very rare that you're walking through the airport thinking, well, you never think I've done anything wrong, but there's always that sense of, why are you checking me so carefully? I mean, what do you think I've done here? So it's quite a stressful environment to be introduced to technology like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in some other places. You know, I've got a cheap little sort of old pocket camera. It's probably 5 or 6 years old at this point. And you can point it at humans, and it will try to draw little boxes around their faces. And it will have a try at sort of, if you put it in there, it will try to say, this is Andrew, this is Mike. It doesn't normally get it right, to be honest. Right. But it's been there, and it's been doing that for a little while. So people see it in that setting.
Hmm. And on a similar vein, on OS 10, on the Photos app, you can start to train it about different people's faces. So in the same way you do with any sort of machine learning algorithm, you say, look, here's a picture of Mike, here's a picture of my mom, here's a picture of my dad. And over time, it starts to learn who those people are. And so,
why have you got all these pictures of me?
I'm more worried about why I've got them with my mum and dad. But what can happen is over time, every now and then you put up a picture and say, I'm just checking this is Mike. And I'm not doing this to you. I'm just checking this is Mike. And then after a period of time, you just type in and search for, I just want pictures of Mike, and display all the pictures that I have on my computer.
I'm really getting quite worried. Can we change the topic onto another scenario?
I should have used a different example other than you. we've had it with the Xbox console, so yeah. With the Kinect camera, so you can, for I think quite a while now, you've been able to walk into the room, and as you walk in, instead of having to sign in, which was quite a tedious sort of interaction method with the game controller, now you can just walk in, the camera sees you, it signs you in and does that, and even says hello Andrew at the bottom of the screen, so it does all that naturally for you.
Yeah, and those are interesting, aren't they, because that's a different kind of camera. As we know, the Kinect camera is really three cameras. It's a video camera, it's an infrared camera, it's a depth camera. And so what it can do is take a three-dimensional view of your face. And we see this now, picking up on your use of Hello, we see this with Windows 10, which has its Windows Hello feature, where you can use biometrics to log into the device. And that can be a fingerprint, it can be an iris scan, but it can also be a picture of your face. And we can do that with depth cameras, so it's not some kind of thing that you can fool with a static image. I can't take a picture of you and hold it up to your PC and log in, because it's using depth information to build that picture of your face and open up and unlock that device with that, which is a really interesting thing. I'm using that at home, and you can just sit in front of the PC, and before you've sat down, it knows who you are, and you're logged into the PC, and it's a very personal thing, quite a useful thing to have.
It is. And again, it's actually quite easy to implement these days, if you know what you're doing. So before we jump into the tech, let's take a look at what some people think about facial recognition in the real world.
Have you ever used your face to log into a device?
Yes, I have.
I have. I use it on my phone.
No.
No.
What about on your PC or Xbox?
On the Xbox I have, yes.
No.
Not recently, no.
I've covered up the thing on my Xbox with a piece of cardboard because it's in my bedroom.
Sometimes it forgets me and then sometimes it remembers who I am.
Would you be happy to use your face as a password to enter a building?
I would, as long as it didn't take too long.
Yes.
Yeah, it would be.
Yes, it would.
I would have to think about it, yeah.
What about to pay for goods in a public place?
Yes.
That I'm not so sure about.
Yep.
Yes, probably I would.
No. I don't think so.
At passport control, do you go to the person or the computer?
Computer, every time.
The computer.
I go to computer.
The computer.
The computer.
Do you trust facial recognition?
Yes.
Yep.
Kind of.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it hasn't got me wrong so far.
Okay, so let's drop into code environment, let's drop into Visual Studio, and in the first instance, let's just look at a really simple example of doing some facial detection. And reality, I think you'll be surprised at how simple it is. So I'm just going to open up a project on my system here, so let's just drop into Visual Studio. And what I've got here is just a .NET application. It's a Windows 10 Universal Windows Platform application. I'm referencing nothing other than the Universal Windows Platform. And I'm just going to run this up, so let's run this on the machine. And all we've built here is a really simple application that looks for people in front of the webcam. So it's just using the webcam, it's not using anything else. And what it should be doing, as you can see, is it starts with the camera off, and when it sees a human face, or at least as close to a human face as I've managed to grow, it switches itself on. If I move out of the frame of the camera a little bit, camera goes off, move back in, camera comes back on. So it's very easy on the UWP to know whether there is a user standing in front of a machine or not. You could turn on a cash machine or something like that, or whatever it might be. And let me just drop and find the code that does that, because it's really simple. So we're dropping to some code here, and I just really want to show you, it's almost like the typical Microsoft one line of code thing. Maybe we should have like a one line of code high five. No, you're just going to leave me hanging there. Okay, let's not do that.
I thought you did like high fives.
I don't. Let's carry on. It's what we've done is abstracted some of the code out of this such that essentially we've got pictures coming from the webcam every so often, and they fall into this function here, onProcessFrameAsync as a software bitmap. That's a new type in UWP. It just represents a picture in memory. And notice what we do. We create, if we haven't already got one, a face detector. So we create a face detector, and then, and ready yourself for this, we call face detector detect faces async. And we pass it the bitmap, and it comes back with all the boxes that it sees in that image where it sees faces. And that's it. The rest of this code is just about drawing dotted lines and dotted boxes on the screen. It just comes back and tells us, this is where I see faces. There's no more to it than that. So you'll notice that I've written a function here that says, for each face that we get back, draw a highlight around that face. And that's all we need in a really simple way, just to have an example of highlighting faces just from a webcam on Windows 10 UWP.
Okay, so in that last demo, we saw what you can do within the UWP on the device. Now we're going to take a look at what you can do if you offload some of that to the cloud.
Yeah, and specifically, we're going to offload some of that to the AI stuff that lives at Project Oxford, and we're going to have a play with that. So let's drop into Visual Studio again. And let me just run up this application and we can talk about it. So let's run it first. And so essentially, this again is just using the webcam and frames of video. But then when we can stop it and take an image. So I'm just going to stop it. Snapped an image on there. And then we've got two buttons. One of those things is going to do facial detection. But it does it by going off to the cloud with a RESTful call. And let's do that right now. See if that works for us. So I'm flattered by this. This is good. It says I'm a 36.3-year-old male. I'll take that. That's good. I wasn't smiling. No beard. It says I do have mustache and sideburns, but I suspect that's probably more to do with the lighting in here than anything else. Also, you might notice on the screen that it has properly identified where my eyebrows are, where my nose is, where my mouth is, and so on and so forth. So pretty accurate kind of picture as to what is in that slot. And if we drop into the code and have a quick look at that code, what we've done in this project is, just go to the Solution Explorer here. You can see Universal Windows, yes, but there's also a reference to Microsoft.ProjectOxford.Face. That's just a NuGet package you can just bring in. It works with the UWP. And then the code, it's not really rocket science by any means. So you'll notice that gives you a class called FaceServiceClient. Now, you need to get a key for Project Oxford. You've got to register. But it's free and you don't have to give a credit card. No one will visit your home. It'll be okay. You just register and it's free to use up to a usage point. And then what we do is we just say client, detect async. We pass it the picture as a stream off the camera. A static photo as a stream taken off the camera. Basically, I'm turning on every option that's available to you here. So we ask for things like facial landmarks, like your eyes and your nose. But we also ask for age, facial hair, gender, whether you're smiling. And if that works, it comes back with a bunch of results because it could have multiple faces in one image. We draw a box around each face that we get. We take each facial landmark and display them. So there's nothing really, it's just a dictionary of stuff. Maybe if I just hit Alt F12 here in Visual Studio and go to those face landmarks and show you what they look like. Eye left, outer, mouth left. So it's not me doing a bunch of stuff. It's there in the SDK. It's all there to do it for you. And then for each of the attributes we get back, like beards, mustaches, smiles, it just gives you a value between 0 and 1. This man is 0.7% smiling. Not 0.7%, 0.7 smiling. 70% smiling, that kind of thing. So I just turn those into yes-no values with a bit of code. And finally, we pick up the age, the gender, and put it all out onto the screen. So it's one call, and we get everything back from it. So it's pretty simple, really.
Yeah, the advantage of sending off to Oxford is that you can get a lot richer set of information back from it.
Well, and that you could do it from cross-platform. So you could be on any platform making this call. That work from web, it'll work from iOS, it'll work from Android, it'll work from anywhere. But the other side of this, I don't know if you want to have a go, and we swap over and you have a quick go at this. If you snap a photo of yourself doing some kind of nice facial expression, button on the left, that's going to crash it, I'm afraid. I think right over on the left, just snap that picture, that's the one. And then far button on the right should call the emotion API at Oxford. And we'll see what emotion that was. I don't know what emotion that looks like. Neutral. Oh, you're going to have to put some more emotion into this, Andrew. Let's try again. Oh, is it going for the big surprise? Let's press that emotion API and see what that gives us. Yeah, we got surprised.
That's how I was surprised.
So that's more than 0.5 surprise must be coming back from that API. Should we cycle and... Let's just take a quick look at that. Essentially, it's the same sort of deal. We've got a reference to microsoft.projectoxford.emotion. And then again, we create an emotion service client. And there's a different key for this, so different keys for the two services. Again, it's free for up to a certain point. And we just pass it the photo, recognize async, it comes back over the wire, and it just gives you a list of emotions, surprise, fear, disgust, and a value between 0 and 1. And that's it. So it's as simple as that to be able to see what emotion you're seeing in a photograph. Perhaps somebody's watching your advert and you want to know whether they seem happy about that, or maybe somebody's leaving a restaurant, you want to know if they've had a good meal or whatever it might be. You can very easily make those kind of calls and get that data back over the network. Okay, so we've looked at a couple of ways at detecting faces in 2D imagery, but now we've also plugged in the Kinect camera here, which has three cameras in it. It has a video camera, an infrared camera, and a depth camera, and lets us do some 3D kind of work in terms of understanding what it sees. Specifically here, I've got a project that I've built in Visual Studio. It's C# code and sitting on top of the Kinect SDK. Let's open that up, and if Andrew doesn't mind demonstrating, let me just see if we bring this up in Visual Studio, and we'll run it first. And what this is going to do is it's going to show the video feed from the Kinect camera, but it's also going to do some facial detection work. And you see straight away that we've created a bit of a weird effect here with our TV screen bouncing images all over the place. But you'll notice that the Kinect camera knows where Andrew's eyes are, it knows where his nose are, it knows where his mouth is. And also in the top left-hand corner of the screen, that face will light up yellow when it thinks that Andrew is engaged. It knows when he's looking away. It knows when he is smiling. It knows when his mouth is open. And it knows if he nods off and goes to sleep that his eyes are closed, and that he's not looking at the screen anymore. It also knows if he was wearing a pair of glasses, it tracks that as well. So we're getting quite a lot of information in real time off this camera about what Andrew's doing, as maybe he's watching TV or watching a film or something like that. Let's take a look at how the code for this is implemented. So let's drop out of the application here. And there's a certain amount of sort of scaffolding you've got to do to get any Kinect application up and running, but it's not a lot. I won't show you all of that here. In our solution, we have a reference to the Kinect SDK, as you can see here and here. And then what I've done is, if we just have a look at a particular piece of code here, essentially, at initialization time, we get past the Kinect sensor object, which represents the sensor that you've seen. And what that sensor can do is it can track up to 6 human bodies in kind of in real time at 30 frames a second. So we create an array of bodies here. There will be 6. We create a thing called a body reader, which gives you the frames of data as it recognizes bodies. And then essentially, we have this function here called update, which is running on a per frame basis. Just kind of quickly, what this does is it gets the latest body frame from that reader that we opened up at initialization time here. So it gets the latest frame of data, what's going on right now, populates the array of bodies that we talked about before, and just grabs the first body to make my programming really kind of simple. We then have a notion of, have we seen this body before, or did it just come into the frame? Is it a new body? Was Andrew already in the frame, or did he just enter the frame? And so we say, if we haven't seen this body before, we lose any previous body. I throw away some data to do with any previous body. And then we create a thing called a face frame source. So having identified that there's a body in shot, I want data about the face on an ongoing basis. And you see we're asking for facial features as well as part of that face information. We open up a face reader to get that data. And then from there on in, we get the latest frame of data about the face, and we store it in this result here. So body data comes in, face data comes in, we store the face data for rendering. If we just scroll down very quickly, I'll just show you this other piece of code. When we come to render, we say if we've got a face, some information to render, then first off, get hold of the box around the face, and we draw a red box around it. So that's pretty simple. And then the next thing that we do is we say, tell me about the face features. And if I show you what these features look like, let's just see if I can show you this with just a quick F12 here and a quick F12 there. And you'll see that the face features are things like left eye, right eye, nose, and the corners of the mouth. And we drew yellow circles on Andrew's face to represent those things in our code. So that was pretty easy to do. They're just drawing those circles right there. And then lastly, we say, tell me about the face properties. And again, if we hit Alt F12 here, and let me show you what a face property looks like. Is the user happy? Are they engaged? Are they got the left eye closed? Are the right eye closed? Is their mouth open? You saw all these things on the screen. Are they engaged and so on? Are they looking away? Then all I do with those is I drew a sort of picture of a face, and I toggle some visual states to make the eyes go closed and the face to go yellow and that kind of thing. Which is just what we're doing here. So really the idea, again, is that this is not rocket science to take a camera like that and a modern SDK and just say, do you see somebody in front of the camera? Are they smiling? Are they looking at the camera? Have they gone to sleep? What might they be doing? It's not complex 3D geometry and those kinds of things. It's just an SDK delivering those values in almost real time, really.
Yeah, and just by introducing a new piece of hardware there, we're able to get much faster information back, and we're able to get a bit more information back than we were through just the UWP alone or by sending off information to the Oxford APIs.
Yeah, exactly. You get a whole bunch of additional information because you've got specialized hardware.
So we took a look there at what we can do with the Kinect camera. Now we're going to take a look at what we can do with a different sort of depth camera. This is a RealSense camera that you can use with the RealSense SDK. This is just a USB 3 webcam. You can get devices which these cameras are now built into as well. We're just going to take that, plug that in and
cool.
See what we can
Thank
do with
much.
This one instead.
Okay, I'm just going to pop that on top of my laptop. And as Andrew says, there are machines out there, thank you, that already have these built into them. I've got one in my house, actually. And let's drop into Visual Studio, because this camera is really skilled at doing analysis of
faces.
I like
this.
This is a clever camera. Let's run this up first. Before we go there, let me just say what this is. This is a .NET Framework WPF application sitting on top of Intel's RealSense SDK, which manifests itself in this library here. It's quite a weird name, but that comes within the Intel SDK. Let's run this up and have a look at what we've got. So the camera has a pretty deep understanding of faces. And in this example, we're displaying both video from the camera and face data from the camera at the same time. So let's just let that kick into gear and spin itself up. Okay, so the first thing I'd highlight is that the camera has a fairly, probably for me, too detailed picture of my own face. It knows where my eyebrows are, if I come over maybe this way. It knows where my eyes, my nose, my jawline, it knows what my lips are doing. And the key thing to get about this is that this is being built as a three-dimensional model. This is not just about static, flat images on a screen. This is a 3D model, and it's got a real picture of my face. The other thing that's going on here is you'll notice some expressions are flickering away on the left-hand side of the screen in real time as we get frames from the camera. Maybe probably the easiest one to show you, if I was to put my tongue out at you, you'll notice that the camera was 100% happy that my tongue was out. If I blow you developers at Channel 9 a beautiful kiss, mwah, love you developers. Mm-mm. It's a bit divided on whether I'm kissing you at Channel 9 or not, but you could see that going in there. The other thing, I don't know if we're going to get it here in the studio, but if I stop speaking and just pause for the camera for a second, let's see. There you go. So the camera is determining as best it can my pulse rate. From the, I think the blood flow that's going through my face as I'm speaking. I'm quite excited at 82 beats a minute to be on Channel 9 talking about this stuff. Let's have a look at the code for this. We're not going to show all the code here. There's a little bit of sort of scaffolding to get any app up and running on this SDK, but it's not big. What I wanted to show you, if we just drop into some code here, is a couple of things. This initialization routine here, we start by having a sense manager, and that kind of represents your connection to the camera. That's really what that is. And we tell it we want to enable face detection. We create a configuration for face detection, and we tell it, just for simplicity, for me, we're only dealing with one face here. We want facial landmarks. That was all those dots around my jawline and those kinds of things. We want those switched on. We want pulse switched on, so we switch that on as well. And we want expression switched on. That was like kisses and tongue out and those kinds of things. So we just switch all that on at the initialization phase. And then what happens is so many times per second we get a frame of data off the camera. So kind of almost real time, it hits you again and again and again. And you get a sample. And when that sample comes in, we update the data that we've currently got. And we say, and this is surprisingly simple really, we say, hey, give me the faces that you see right now in that frame of data. And if we get any, we just look at the first one. And you'll see, we say, okay, where is it in space? Where is that frame? And then we can draw that box that you saw me draw on the screen. And then we say, okay, where are the landmarks? Where are the eyes? Where are the nose? Where are those things? And maybe I could just show you, if I can do an Alt F12, I don't know if Visual Studio will do this for me. We've ended up in a nullable there. That's not really where I wanted to go. Let me see if I can jump to this query landmarks method here with Alt F12 and have a look at these landmarks. And what I wanted to show you was these landmark types. You can see my code is not doing a lot of work here. It gives me these landmarks as just a sort of dictionary of here is where the eyebrow is, here is where the lips are. It just tells me where those things are. So we can drop back to that. You'll notice that the pulse, we just say, hey, what is the pulse? It's as simple as that, you don't have to do anything else. And then we say, what expressions do you see? And for each expression that we get, we just store them in an array, and later on, in this function down here actually, we draw them back onto the screen. I've actually got two sort of threads, one processing the data and one drawing the data. Again, just to show you what an expression looks like, let's just hit Alt F12 in Visual Studio. Here are those expressions. Here's the kiss expression. Here's the tongue out expression. Again, it's not me doing complex 3D geometry. It's just telling me, hey, this guy's tongue's out. That's all I need to do in order to process that data. So really, really powerful. You see what knowledge this thing has got of your face. And not that difficult to code against either.
No. And the nice thing here is that whilst we're using different SDKs, it's actually a very similar process each time. Open the image from the camera, analyze what you've got there, and then feed that back to the developer.
Yeah, I think the thing that's surprising is you always think I'll have to be doing some complex 3D yes. analysis, but no, the SDKs tend to say, here's a nose, here's a mouth, this person's smiling. Okay, so let's go back into the realm of Project Oxford and that cloud-based API for intelligent analysis of photographs and so on. Let's drop back into Visual Studio. I'm just going to bring up a project here. Again, it's a Windows 10 universal Windows application, but this time around we've got a reference, as we've had before, to projectoxford.face for doing facial work with Project Oxford. Let's run this up. And what this does is it does face identification. So this is just the webcam. And if I tick on this little question mark button here, this should spot that this is me, hopefully. Go off to the cloud and it thinks it's me. If I swap with Andrew, you want to have a try and see if it knows who you are?
Yeah, because I haven't used this before, it should come back and say it doesn't know who I am, which is just on there. Okay, so now we're going to tell Oxford who I am. So if I add myself in here, I'm just not going to move my mic, it's going to be Andrew this time, and click submit, and that's going to send that off. Okay, so then what I want to do is actually tell Oxford to learn who I am. So if I click on learn on there, so that's gone off and it's saying, yes, I'm now learning who that person is. And then I'm going to call myself back and see if he recognises me this time. Yes, yeah, so cool. We think this is Andrew. So that's a very quick process to go through as well.
Yeah. So we're invoking a few APIs at Oxford to make that happen, but all of it's done again through that SDK that we get, that NuGet package that we're using. So if we just jump into the code here, let's drop into a little bit of code. And it's probably easier to go through what we do to train it in the first instance. So we use this face service client again like we did previously. And the way this works is we take a photo, so we grab the photo of you, and then Oxford has this notion of groups of people. So what we do is I call an API, it's just a RESTful API to say, if we don't already have a group called My People up there at Oxford, then create one. So now we've got a group. And then we just take your name that you've typed in off the screen. There's no fancy data binding or anything here. We just take it straight off the screen. And then within that Oxford group, we say, create me a person called Andrew. And it gives you back a GUID to identify Andrew. I map that into a name locally on the device. So that's just what this code is doing here. And then finally, we say, OK, we're ready to go. Call across the REST API. Here's the GUID. Here's the GUID for the group. Here's the GUID for the person. Here's the photo. This is Andrew. And now you're living with an ID within a group in the cloud.
And just to be clear, that's within an ID within your group within the cloud. It's not like I could walk up to any developer's device and go, hey, who am I?
Yeah, it's all hanging off my subscription to the service. And then when it comes to identify the user, we take a photo. Interestingly, what we do first is we do Oxford's detection, which we saw in the previous demo. So we call Oxford and say, detect faces in here. And Oxford says, okay, I've detected faces, and I'm going to give you an ID to represent that detection, which is good for the next 24 hours. So it gives you a GUID back. And this is the GUID that we get back here. Then we go off to the cloud again and say, oh, let's get hold of my group called My People. If we haven't got one already, let's go and get it. And then finally, we say, okay, within that group, that person group in the cloud, we say, that GUID you just gave me for the face detection and that GUID for that group, essentially, tell me who this is. Who is that within there? Does that give anyone in that group? Does it identify anybody? And if it does, then we get results back. You can see we just reach into the first one here. It gives us back the identifier of the person it's identified, in your case, Andrew. We map it back into a name, not a GUID, and we put it on the screen. So it's fairly simple. There's a group with a person in. We send a photo and say, detect faces in this. Who is it within that group? And you get a yes or no. This is Andrew. This is Mike. This is unknown.
And you could put this into, say, for instance, tills in a restaurant or in a bar, that sort of place where many people walking up, logging in, and you can have a group of people take a picture of that person using that to log that person in that instance.
Yeah, it's great for those kind of scenarios, because at the moment the way this is limited on the cloud side is I think you can have 1,000 people in a group. So you couldn't do this to identify the whole human race, but if you just had a closed user community, that worked really well. All right, so let's come back from the cloud where we're doing some identification back down onto the device, and we've plugged our RealSense camera back in as well because it can do identification based on three-dimensional models of faces. So let's drop back into Visual Studio and run up this project. And again, this project, just to say what it is, it's built on .NET Framework, it's built with WPF, and it's built with Intel's RealSense SDK. Let's run this up first. And we've already trained this a little bit, so what we should find, hopefully, is that this recognizes me. And if I step out of the frame and Andrew steps in, we'd hope that that would say that this is Andrew, and if I come back, we can play this game all day, I guess.
It's a good game.
It's not. I think you're on a bit of a slant for it there.
Sorry.
And it's got me again. So very, very quick, and it's also doing this off a three-dimensional model of the face. Now, as when we showed RealSense before, I'm not going to show you all of the code that lives in this solution. I just want to focus on the bit that's crucial for what we're doing here. So let's just drop into a little piece of code. Let me just find my control here and drop in here. And it follows the same structure as we had before. There's an initialization phase where we get the object that kind of represents the camera, really. And we say we want face detection switched on. We create a configuration. For me, to make life easy, we just track one face here. And we switch on facial recognition. So we switch that on as well. We set a threshold for accuracy, and I'm actually asking for the most accurate model at the moment. And also, we tell it that it shouldn't just automatically register new people as it sees them. My code should be in control of that, and that's what we do here with this on-demand registration. Just as an aside, we actually store the database of recognized faces into a file, and this is my code here restoring that at the start of a session. So I'm just loading up something that was previously persisted with my face and Andrew's face already stored in it. Okay, so let's look at the frame processing. Every time the camera sends us a frame of data, we update our view of the world, we grab the first face that is available to us, and we essentially say, and again, this might surprise you with its simplicity, to the SDK, do you recognize this face, yes or no? And it's going to come back with a number saying, yes, that's Andrew or that's Mike, or alternatively, no, I don't know who that is. If it knows who it is, we simply turn the number into a name that we've stored locally on the device, and we put that on the screen. You saw it. It says identified Andrew. It says identified Mike. If we don't know, if the camera doesn't know who the person is, and this is just my hacky way of saying, and has somebody typed a name on the screen, if so, we tell the camera to register the user. It gives us a unique number, unique integer for them, and then we just store that locally as a map to their name. And it really is as simple as that. To the camera, do you recognize this person, yes or no? If not, well then give me a unique number for them that I can use to identify them in the future. And it's as simple as that. And it's worth saying while we're here, I suppose, that this is also used as one of the mechanisms for Windows Hello. And so we should be able to use Windows Hello on this machine. I should be able to lock this machine and just lock it like that. And then it turns on the camera. It should start to look for me any second now. And it logs me back in and unlocks my machine just based on my face. A very natural way of logging into your machine.
It's kind of magical as well.
It is kind of magical, especially if you just sit down at the device and it's on before you get in there. It's really cool. And Intel RealSense is the camera that makes that happen for this scenario on this screen here.
So interesting, we're doing the same thing that we did in the previous demo. In the previous demo, we were taking 2D image data, sending that off to the cloud and carrying out the compute on Azure for that.
Yeah.
Whereas in this demo, we're taking 3D depth data and it's actually using the hardware that is on the device or even sort of built into the device. I suppose it's up to you which route you want to take. It depends on whether you've got access to a good connection to do that, whether you've got the actual hardware installed or the hardware embedded in the laptop. Whilst it is doing the same thing, it's doing it in very different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. That difference, I suppose, between sort of 2D with no specialized hardware versus 3D with specialized hardware and the trade-off between those two things.
Great stuff.
Cool stuff.
Yes, it's time for Control Z. That section of the show where we go back and cover some of the things that maybe we skipped over whilst going through some of the demos.
So like we did in the previous show, I made a few notes about some of the things we could talk about. Let me see if I can bring those up in Plumbago over here. And the things I picked out, I only picked out three things in the show, maybe some more, but the three I picked out, the first one was around bitmaps and encoding of bitmaps. I tend to find that when you're working, obviously there's lots of images flowing around when you're using these kinds of SDKs. And, you know, there's ways of representing those in .NET in memory and on the UWP in memory. Things like traditionally we had classes like writable bitmap and in later frameworks we've got software bitmap. And sometimes you meet an API that wants one when you've got the other, and that can be a bit painful. And then, of course, there's also the point where you hit the real world and you want a PNG file or a JPEG file to send off to the cloud, a proper encoding of a bitmap. And then you have to encode to that and get some results back and so on. It's not the end of the world. It's all doable. But there's pieces of code in what we've put on GitHub that are messing around with formats. And sometimes, just sometimes, you sit and think, I just wish I didn't have to transcode this in order to put it into that other place. It's just kind of how it is, really. I think it's just a fact of life.
Yeah, currently that's one of those things that you're just going to come up against whilst you're going through these sort of processes.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just if you're image-centric stuff, you're going to bang up against some of that stuff.
Okay.
Next thing, we did show quite a bit of stuff on webcams, but we also showed some stuff on other kinds of cameras.
Yeah, and I suppose I quite often hear or see people saying, I'm going to use this particular piece of technology, maybe because it's fashionable or because they think they can. And actually, when you look at those three devices that we use, so standard camera, RealSense mm-hmm. camera, Kinect camera, they've all got very different capabilities, but they're also backed up by the SDKs behind them that give them different capabilities. So it really depends on how much you need to get out of something as to which one that you use. For instance, the Kinect requires a separate power lead, power supply, because there's a lot of data that's being passed through it. The Kinect and the RealSense require USB 3. The standard RGB camera, that's built into most devices, most phones and most tablets, most laptops that we have these days. So it really depends on the level of fidelity that you're trying to get to as to which device you would turn to.
Yeah, and I think you're kind of paying for the play, you know, so the more capability you want, if you want that sort of 3D rich visual modeling of faces, then you're going to need some special hardware for that. We can't get that out of a webcam at this point. But it becomes less and less special. You know, we already see quite a few laptops that have those cameras built into them. There's next generations of those cameras coming along. So we're probably going to see them become more common. It's just the point where we're at the moment. I think we'll see more of them as we go along. And also it's worth saying on the receiving side of the software, like you say, you need a USB 3 cable for all that data that's coming in. And you probably need quite a decent sort of meaty PC as well sitting there crunching on some of that data to run some of those SDKs. They're often quite CPU intensive, they're often quite memory intensive. So, you know, maybe trying to get some of this to run on that cheap tablet that you bought, you know, from Amazon or something is perhaps not the best thing to do. You need a bigger PC for some of that stuff to work.
Sure.
Okay, fair enough. So we talked about depth camera requirements. The other bit that I had on here to talk about was around some of the SDKs availability, because we built three different kinds of applications as demos here. We had Windows 8.1 modern application in one place. We had a Windows 10 universal Windows platform application. And we also had desktop applications built with WPF and full .NET framework. And really, that's just reflecting the reality of where some of those SDKs are right now. Kinect SDK isn't available yet for Windows 10 UWP, so we built an 8.1 app. Of course, it will run on Windows 10, so that's okay. You can put it in the store, it'll run. But you can't target that SDK at a 10 app. And then when it came to using the RealSense camera, there isn't a Windows 10 UWP SDK for that, and so we built that into a desktop application. Although it's fair to say that some of the RealSense capabilities are already showing up in the UWP. You can get depth images and so on. But if you want the full hand tracking and face tracking stuff, there's a desktop SDK for that. There isn't a UWP SDK.
And it's interesting, but this is one of those things that we just come across all the time. It's just that there's these separations and abstractions between all the things we're trying to use and trying to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as technologists and technology companies, we're trying to bring all these things together and ultimately aiming for convergence across these. So that's maybe what's available now. I'm sure things will get updated and we'll see some of those SDKs combining or becoming more easier to access from other parts of Windows and other devices.
Yeah, I'm sure. And actually, we should give people some links for the things that we used here. Okay, so let's just finish up by sharing some links for the show. Let me just tab down to my browser here. A few places to go for this show, and it's worth saying again, the links that we're giving you here are all stored in the GitHub repository. And they're also going to be in the comment field under the video on Channel 9. But the few links that we share here, go to dev.windows.com. That's a great place to go for anything to do with Windows 10 and the UWP. If you're interested in Project Oxford, that's projectoxford.ai. You can go there and try out some samples and get the documentation and sign up for the service and so on. If you're interested in RealSense, software.intel.com, and you can flick off there to RealSense and have a look at what the information is about that. And then finally, for the show, if you want to get the code, just go to github.com/contextshow, and you'll find all the bits, including the links that we're talking through here, on that site for the show. So those are places you can go after the show and get all the different bits that we've talked about.
So please do give us your feedback on Twitter or in the comments down below. And we will see you in the next episode.